Hi there, boys. Bob and Ray next.
Thank you, Roger. And hello again, everybody. This is Bob and Ray here at the big W-shaped desk. All set to go now until 7 o'clock.
I'm looking down the, I was just looking down the radio listings. It says we're due to be here until 7, and that means we've got just under 3 hours to accomplish what we have in mind.
I have the theme music all set for the first feature.
Okay, Webley L. Webster, let's get to it. Time for our public affairs program, Bankruptcy, a program designed to provide a platform from which businessmen on the verge of bankruptcy because of bad breaks or management may make a plea to the public and thus perhaps avert financial disaster. Today our guest is Mr. Willard Huffer, trolley car broker. Welcome to Bankruptcy, Mr. Huffer.
Thank you. Which microphone should I plead into?
Well, the one you're on there is okay, I guess. Before you start your plea, though, would you fill us in on your problem and how it got to be a problem?
Certainly, Bob. Would you prefer I call you Mr. Elliott?
I prefer Mr. Elliott.
Fine, Mr. Elliott. I have 150 completely refurbished old trolley cars with brand new fluorescent lighting inside, and I'd like to sell them at a reasonable price.
Well, now, of course, the obvious first question is, where did you get hold of 150 old trolley cars in this day and age, sir?
Well, it's quite a long story, and a sad one, too. But briefly, I got them for $500 a piece at city auctions a couple of years ago.
Well, what prompted you to do that?
Well, some clown sitting next to me at the auction urged me to buy them. He said he knew some foreign guy from one of those underdeveloped countries who'd pay 10 times what I paid for them to use in his country.
All right. Well, then what happened next?
Well, this clown disappeared after I'd bought them. And I spent the next year collaring delegations from different backward countries as they walked in and out of the United Nations.
You, of course, were trying to unload 150 old trolley cars on them. Were any of them at all interested?
Very little. It seemed that all these underdeveloped countries planned on skipping the trolley car phase in their development and go right to buses and planes. Although I got close to a sale in the city of, did you ever hear of Kathmandu in Nepal?
Yes, I have. Could you tell us how that one happened to fall through?
Well, I got as far as painting Garnark, Petura, Dingwan, Kathmandu, Sam on the side of the trolley.
What does that mean?
A city of Kathmandu Transportation Service. I looked up how to say it in the public library.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mr. Elliott, the roof fell in.
Nepalese money got tight?
No, Kathmandu is situated in the Himalaya Mountains, the world's highest.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that Kathmandu is a bit hilly would be like saying that the Empire State Building over here is cute.
Or that the Grand Canyon is adorable.
Yes.
Well, how did all of this affect the deal?
Well, at the last minute, the powers that be, namely the High Lama, decided that they needed cable cars like the San Francisco has.
Oh, that was a tough break. Practically signed, sealed, and delivered, and then poof. Did you try any other approaches to unloading the trolleys?
Oh, I tried everything. I spoke to the Disneyland people about putting them in as a trolley land.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to sell them as diners, but they're using the big aluminum ones now, you know.
Yeah, made for
them. I even tried to sell them as scrap, but being mostly wood, they're worthless.
So now on the verge of bankruptcy, you're holding down 3 jobs to pay for the cost of keeping them in a railroad yard, and you're desperate. Well, this is where you make your plea, Mr. Huffer. Keep it short, if you will.
Thank you. Anyone interested in 150 refurbished trolley cars with Garnark, Petura, Dinwan, Kathmandu, San written on the sides can get in touch with me through the Bob and Ray Public Service Department.
Thank you, Mr. Willard Huffer, your trolley car broker who really needs help. Good luck, sir. And tune in next time when another person whose business is on the rocks comes to plead for help on bankruptcy. Backstage Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. At La Scala in Milan, it's near the end of the second act of La Traviata. Things have been going quite well for Mary, Harry, and Calvin in their opera debut until it became apparent that Greg Marlowe had taken a bottle of wine into the prompter's box. Now, as the curtain slowly falls on act. We'll be right back. Yes, Mary.
Yes.
I'm beginning to enjoy this opera work,
you
aren't
know,
you?
Let me tell you something. For people who've never been in opera before, I think we're doing all right.
You certainly sounded beautiful in the second
folks.
Act, Mary.
Oh, that's marvelous. Hey, it did just great, folks.
Well, thank you, Greg. I think
I'm quite thrilled with your performances.
I think some of the bugs have been ironed out, and I think we'll be
thank
all right.
Thank you, Greg. I wish you'd do something about the way you're holding those cards.
Oh, forget it.
Hey,
look, you got a few minutes here before the third act.
Yes, there's an intermission here.
I'm going to sit over here at the electric organ, accompany myself, and go out and entertain the nice people of Millarn with a little song I wrote.
You're going to sing?
Wait a minute.
What do you mean, Mr. Marlowe?
People never do that at opera, do they?
Why, of course not.
Unheard of.
They'll mill around in the lobby, that's all.
Listen,
discuss
this
the
will
opera.
Be your first. Hey, stagehands. Roll the Fiducci out here on the stage. Roll me out in the middle of the stage.
Yes, he's really going to do it. I think he's going to sing to this audience. I can't either. And there goes the curtain. Oh, this
folks,
is terrible.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen?
Something like this in
this
my
is
life.
Something new. You probably don't even understand what I'm saying. So I'll raise my voice. I'm going to sing a little song for you.
Oh, isn't this awful?
While the kids are backstage changing their costumes.
This is the first time this has ever happened.
Sit back, fasten your seatbelts, and dig some of this rhythm.
Oh, did you hear what he said?
Oh,
look at the crowd. They can't believe it either.
Oh, my.
I didn't think he was ever able to sing, or much less write a song.
I always wondered about it. I send my song to Puerto Rico or the seven seas.
Puerto Rico.
I blow a kiss to Puerto Rico to travel on the breeze.
He doesn't have a bad voice.
I so high, the trade wind blowing.
Listen to that audience.
With amber light, sea and hills will settle glowing. The milky at night.
They're angry. Oh, they're angry.
Hands and lace and perfume.
Get him off there.
Yeah.
Black get him off there. Save his life.
And so it appears the audience doesn't take too well to the song that Greg Marlowe has decided to sing and play on the stage of La Scala. You ought to be here tomorrow when we'll hear Greg say,
"Where you taking me? Hey, what is this?"
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking. And now the Rotman Corporation, maker of fine buggy whips for more than nine centuries, brings you The Orderlies, a dramatic behind-the-scenes glimpse of life in a big city hospital.
Orderly Winecoop, Orderly Winecoop, report at once to Chief Orderly Snellwell. Report to Chief Orderly Snellwell.
Orderly Winecoop reporting, sir. Got here as fast as I could.
Sorry to hear that 4.9 seconds is the best time you can make, Winecoop. Perhaps a few physical workouts with Orderly Training Director Gore would help you get back in shape.
Oh, please, Orderly Snellwell, don't send me to Training Director Gore. I barely survived his brutality when I was a young recruit. One of the best things about becoming a full-fledged orderly was realizing I'd never have to see him again.
Winecoop, there's no assurance that you're set for life when you graduate from training and win your broom and dustpan. You knew that your fitness to serve would be tested again from time to time.
Oh, surely I did, Your Excellency, and I work hard to keep in shape, but I'll put in even more time on my road work. Only, please don't send me back to Orderly Training Director Gore.
Stop whimpering and wiping your nose on the cups of my trousers, Winecoop. If this conduct report I have on you is correct, you may be drummed out of the corps anyway. An informant tells me that you were seen giving aspirin tablets to the patient in 462.
Well, that's technically true, Chief Orderly Snellwell, but he had a headache and there was nothing on his chart that said he couldn't have aspirin, so I gave him a couple of my own when he begged for them.
So now you've become qualified to administer medication to the patients? Is that what you're saying, Winecoop?
Oh, no, indeed, sir. Only doctors and nurses and other saintly people are allowed to do that. But I figured that aspirin's not really a medication that takes years of training to administer.
Besides, the guy in 462 is only here to have an ingrown toenail cut, so I didn't see how aspirin could hurt him.
And, of course, you weren't even aware of hospital rule number 817, which states that only injections are to be given for the relief of extreme pain?
Well, I'm well aware of all 4,000 hospital rules, sir, but this guy didn't have extreme pain. It was just a little headache that could be cured with aspirin.
I see. So thanks to you, the patient didn't have to pay the standard $30 hospital fee for an injection of painkiller. That makes you quite a hero, doesn't it, Weinkoop?
Oh, gosh, I never even thought about the huge injection fee the hospital was losing. I've been a terrible fool, Chief Audley Schnellwell. Even the dumbest rookie knows we never do things the cheap, easy way in a big city hospital. Oh, I'm a disgrace to the uniform I wear.
There, Weinkoop. It's not as if the damage you did couldn't be repaired. The patient in 462 is still there. It's just possible that he could get another headache, if you follow me.
Oh, yeah, I follow you real good, Chief Orderly Schnellwell. And you can just bet I'll be on my way to 462 in a jiffy with all the pots and pans I can bang on. I'll give that guy such a headache, he'll be begging for an injection at any price.
Now you're speaking with the snarling cruelty I like to hear, Weinkoop.
Thank you.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the day may yet come when I'll be proud to call you a colleague.
And so, with his indomitable will to serve the hospital by mistreating its patients, the orderly marches onward in the name of medical science. Be sure to join us soon when the Rockman Corporation, maker of fine buggy whips for more than 9 centuries, will bring you another thrilling story of the orderly.
They're big enough to treat you as an individual.
She was a wild and lovely rose. Oh, how I love her, heaven knows. But though my heart was true, it would never do. Party life was what she chose. Last night I saw
discovering that Tasty Cake is one packaged cake that really lives up to its good name. It's the way Tasty Cake is baked that makes it so special, with all the great tasting things like milk, butter, and eggs. Take Tasty Cake Crimpies, for instance, chocolate or vanilla cakes filled with rich vanilla cream and then topped with chocolatey icing. Tasty Cake Crimpies come in family packs, and they come for lots less than you expect for something that tastes this good. Tasty Cake Crimpies. More of all the good things wrapped up in one.
Yes, so take a taste and break and have a lot of fun.
Have a lot of fun.
Tasty cake is all the good things. All the good things wrapped up in one.
And this note, tomorrow's Blood Donor Day in Bergenfield, New Jersey. Donate blood between 1 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Old South Church Hall on West Church Street. Babysitting services will be provided. And now the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who's learned to face misfortune by practicing until she got it right. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is planting geraniums in the downstairs bathtub. It's mid-afternoon, and Sergeant Griebenshire of the Village Police Department's bomb squad is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Village Police Department bomb squad Sergeant Griebenshire. I hope I didn't call you away from the office just as you were in the middle of putting out a lit fuse.
No, not at all, Miss Bessinger. We don't have many bomb scares here in the village, you know. Even when we do, I never take the bomb back to the office to work on it. All of our defusing is done right out in the field.
Well, I think that's nice. I always thought that working out in the fresh air is healthier for a person than being cooped up in a stuffy office all day.
Well, that may be. Of course, I've never considered anything about my job to be very healthy.
Well, I suppose you have to concentrate on developing the health opportunities that are there. You know, jog from the police station to the bomb site, and then breathe deeply while you're working, all that sort of thing.
Well, I'm afraid my job's a little too nerve-wracking to make a recreation program out of it, Miss Bessinger.
Oh, I think most people just imagine that. I remember during Prohibition when my father was running bootleg gin over to the next county. He used to get terribly tensed up until he realized how much healthier it was to let someone else drive the truck while he sat in back and breathed the fresh air.
Yes. As I recall, your father was sitting on the tailgate of a whiskey truck when the police shot him.
That's true. Daddy made a perfect target back there when the fuzz started shooting. But except for that one time he got killed, it always seemed to make him feel better to ride in the fresh air.
Well, I imagine getting killed once would be all it would take to make a person stop feeling better.
I suppose so, but I still think Daddy's health program would do a person like yourself a lot of good. I remember the coroner telling me afterward that Daddy was in wonderful shape for a man his age.
Except for the fact that he'd been killed, you mean?
Yes, that was the only thing they found wrong with him. So I really think you should do as much of your work outdoors as you possibly can.
Well, I appreciate your concern about my health, Miss Bessinger, but I don't imagine that's what you called me over here to talk about, is it?
No, you're right as rain about that, Village Police Department Bomb Squad Sergeant Griebenshire. I've been in stark terror all day because somebody planted a time bomb right outside my window. I have no idea when it's set to go off, but I'm afraid it'll happen before I can get my application approved to take out more insurance on the house.
Well, technically speaking, it's hard to set a timing device more than 12 hours in advance, but I find it hard to believe that anybody would want to blow up your house at all, ma'am. You're just a harmless ding-a-ling.
Well, I always wanted the people in the village to think of me that way, but there's definitely a bomb attached to the foundation of the house. I heard it ticking when I was sprinkling the lawn this morning, and you can see for yourself right under the window there, see?
Well, I see what you're pointing at, Miss Bessinger, but that's not a time bomb. It's your water meter.
Oh, gosh, all hemlock, I do believe that could be a possibility, Village Police Department Bomb Squad Sergeant Griebenshire. That might explain why it ticked faster when I turned on the garden hose. My sakes, you just can't imagine what a worry this lifts from my shoulders. I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Can it be that Edna's freedom from fear of being blown to smithereens may at least enable her to step through the doorway to happiness? Or will it only lead to further heartbreak when she gets the bill for more insurance on the house after she no longer needs it? Join us for the next episode when Edna may try to raise money to pay the premium by burning down the place in the gathering dusk. To the popular Bob and Ray Public Service feature, Widen Your Horizons, portion of the show where we help you acquire new skills for leading a fuller, happier life. Today, our subject is how to water a plant, and here with us to conduct the guest lecture is a prominent authority in the field, Mr. Benson Tibbett.
I believe the firm you're with is the Hardy Perennial Flower Pot Company. Is that right, Mr. Tibbet?
That's correct. Our founder and president, Mr. Hardy, has been making flower pots every year now since 1938.
Uh-huh.
So it's only natural that he should decide to call his firm the Hardy Perennial Flower Pot Company.
All right. I know you're a little bit nervous, but please, we're all friends of yours here, and let's move along. Yeah, I was a little surprised when you told me on the phone the other day that very few people know how to water a plant. I thought you just poured water on them.
Well, if you strip away all the technical details, I guess that is what you do to water a plant, basically. But it's that very kind of oversimplification which leads people into trouble. For example, if you used a sprinkling can with a large area of spray holes at the top to water a very small indoor flower pot,
yeah,
I think you can see how a lot of the excess water would go on the carpet.
Yes, and then, too, I suppose the type of plant you're watering has a lot to do with it.
In what way?
Well, I just mean if you had some tropical jungle plant like a fern, you'd water it more than a cactus.
Well, why would you do that?
Well, a cactus is a desert plant, so it doesn't need as much water.
I see. Well, if you've got an idea like that in your head, why can't you just use a sprinkling can with fewer spray holes, like I suggested in the first place?
Well, I guess you could do that, too. I was trying to make a slightly different point.
Oh.
I didn't even become involved in your lecture, so why don't you go right ahead?
Oh, I think I'd better. If you're that mixed up, then you must have some listeners who are even dumber. Let me begin by taking this potted plant out of my sample case. Now, I've already filled my sprinkling can with fresh water from your drinking fountain out here in the hall.
Okay, fine. Would you like to tell our audience, what, did you let it run a little bit first?
Yes.
Would you like to tell our audience what type of plant it is that you brought along to water?
What do you mean? What I'd like to tell them what type of plant it is. If you want to know the truth, I wouldn't like to be doing any of this. I'd like to be home drinking a beer, watching TV. That's what I'd like to be doing.
Well, I don't suppose the variety of plant is too important anyway.
No, of course not. I already told you that twice. It's the number of spray holes at the top of the sprinkling can that governs the whole thing. And since this is only a size 8 flower pot, I'm using a sprinkling can that has just one small spigot type opening at the top.
That's to concentrate the flow of water into a small area.
Certainly. Now, if there's a better way to keep the water in a small area than to pour it out a small hole, I'd like to know what it is.
I would, too.
So I'll pour it out of the can onto the plant in this fashion.
Mr. Tibbet, it's dripping out the hole in the bottom of the flower pot out of the carpet here.
Yes, it always does that after I've used the same plant for several demonstrations just a few hours apart. Now, notice how I only sprinkle it 15 to 20 seconds and then stop.
Well, you may have stopped sprinkling, but it hasn't stopped dripping on the rug yet.
Well, I don't know why I have to explain everything to you twice, but I'll take one more swing at it. By afternoon, the soil in there gets drenched from having me demonstrate with it all day. Do you follow? So, of course, it drips.
Well, why do you conduct demonstrations by sprinkling water on the same plant all day?
Well, what do you expect me to do? Carry a whole garden around with me? Now, pipe down. Hold this pot so I can explain, will you?
No, I'm not going to hold it. I don't want my suit to get ruined either. Now, just take it out of here and don't come back till it stops dripping, okay?
Now, don't try to tell me what to do, buddy. Just for that, I'm not going to come back, even when it does stop dripping. So long, wise guy.
You've been listening to an informative lecture by Mr. Benson Tibbet of the Hardy Perennial Flower Pot Company. Be sure to join us soon when we'll have another chance to learn a valuable new skill in the next edition of Widen Your Horizon.
Hi, Ben.
What is it? I'm thinking.
What are you...
And now, Humlinger Industries, the manufacturing company that always operates with you in mind, presents another thrilling episode on the crime-fighting career of Canfield.
My name is Fats Canfield. I'm a man of many talents. Some think of me as a brilliant private detective. Others think of me as an expert on gourmet cooking. But to my closest friends, I'm known as a 400-pound tub of lard. The other evening, I was whipping up a lobster Newburgh for my late-night snack when I received a phone call from a man I'd never met. He said he was publishing a cookbook and wanted to include my recipe for frozen peach meringue tort. He asked me to rush down to his print shop in the warehouse district right away so he could go to press with the book first thing in the morning. Now, that seemed like a normal request, and I had no reason to suspect anything, even when I got to the print shop and found it deserted.
Say, pal, are you Fats Canfield?
Yes. Sorry about breaking the glass to crawl in through a back window, but I thought the place was deserted.
No, it's not. I'm here.
Waiting for my recipe for frozen peach meringue tort?
No, I just said that on the phone. It was a trick to get you here so I could work you over for poking your nose into the Mulford case.
Well, I really think you're making a mistake. If you don't plan to do anything but beat me to a pulp, your recipe book will be a much bigger seller if it includes my instructions for making frozen peach meringue tort. See, the secret most housewives never know is that the crust should always be made from graham cracker crumbs.
Hey, look, fella, that business about me publishing a cookbook was just an idea off the top of my head to get you down here.
Well, regardless of how you thought of the idea, it's a good one. And my recipe could help put it on the bestseller list. Now, besides the graham cracker crumbs and the peaches, you also need a half cup of diced walnuts. Be sure they're diced. Ordinary shelled walnuts could spoil everything.
Hey, you aren't going to make me listen to all this, are you?
Certainly. And just like every other young housewife I talk to, they all want to rush right in and start cooking before they have the whole recipe well in mind. That's a sad commentary on modern life.
Well, you don't need to get all broken up about it in my case. You see, I'm not a young housewife, and I don't plan on making this junk anyway. I'm just getting paid $500 to beat the daylights out of you and then scram.
Personally, I think you'll get more enjoyment in the long run by learning how to make a divine peach tort. Now, you also need 3 pints of vanilla ice cream and about 10 marshmallows. But first, prepare your crust by mixing cracker crumbs and walnuts with butter in an ordinary 9-inch pie plate.
Hey, look, I don't have an ordinary 9-inch pie plate. Now, would you mind standing a little to your right? I don't want you hitting your head on the corner of that printing press when you go down.
Yeah, certainly. Thanks for the consideration. Now, you bake the crust at 350 degrees for about 10 minutes and put it in the refrigerator to chill.
Hey, look, buddy, let's get one thing straight.
Well, by all means. I'll go through it again slowly. Take the crumbs.
No. That's not what I want to get straight, Canfield. You were thanking me for my consideration because I don't want you to hit your head on the way down. Well, let me tell you, I'm not being considerate. I just don't want to face a murder rap by having you crack your skull open when I'm only getting paid to beat you up.
Oh, I see. Very well, I understand. Now, spread a layer of ice cream topped by a layer of peach preserves inside the crust.
For $500, they're only getting what they paid for. And this is what they paid for, so take that. There. Guess that should do it. And don't worry if you bleed for quite a while before anybody finds you. Fat guy must have more blood than he needs anyway. So long, Tubby.
After he left, I lay there for several minutes, my head under a tray full of 12-point Bodoni type. I was thinking about the connection this might have with the Mulford case. More important, I was worried about the way that hoodlum's tort might come out when he'd left before I could tell him to melt the marshmallows over the top. But then why should I care what happened to him? After all, he'd never done anything nice for me. I decided to forget the whole thing and close out another day in the crime-fighting career of Fats Canfield, private investigator.
And once again, our scouts, though, to change just the pace here a little bit, have been searching the railroad and bus stations for victims of misfortune who need a helping hand from what we like to call our generous Bob Ray organization. And, Bob, I assume that that downcast figure sitting next to you is our first guest today.
He's our first guest today, Ray, Mr. Toby Fessenden of Los Angeles, California. I understand, Toby, that you're stranded here in New York, virtually penniless, and we want to hear about your sad story.
Yes, I don't even have enough money to buy gas for my cab to get back to Los Angeles, and the fare I dropped off here in town is refusing to pay what he owes me.
You mean you brought a passenger in your taxi all the way from Los Angeles to New York?
Yes, sir, but it was just a misunderstanding, I guess. He hopped in my cab in L.A. and gave me an address on Lexington Avenue.
Right.
So naturally, I started out for New York. I didn't know there was a Lexington Avenue out here in Los Angeles, too. The tab came to $1,729. But the guy refused to pay it because he didn't want to come here.
Well, I know that's a terrible financial tragedy that's befallen you, sir. I can't understand how it happened if your passenger only wanted to go from one address in Los Angeles to another. Seems strange he didn't say something when he saw that you were driving clear across the country.
Well, he claims he didn't know I was driving clear across the country. He thought I was just taking a shortcut down some new freeway and got lost.
Well, I guess a misunderstanding like that could happen. It doesn't make your burden of despair any lighter, though, does it?
No, sir, it does.
So to cheer you up, we want you to have this lovely gift from our generous Bob and Ray organization. It's a tractor-type power lawnmower, specially made for use in cemeteries, formal gardens, and other large areas. And it's manufactured by the same people who used to make the Willie's Night automobile.
Oh, well, it certainly should be durable enough to solve my problem.
Right.
If there was any way my problem could be solved with a lawnmower.
Well, we're glad we've been able to help even a little bit. And let's move along to our next hard luck story. Here is Mrs. Wilma Swampscott of Troy, New York. Miss Swampscott, it says in your card that you need money to get back to Brazil. Now, that implies that you've been to Brazil before.
Yes, I just got in from Rio the day before yesterday, and buying a plane ticket up here took all but $18 of my savings,
mm-hmm.
So I'm going to need a good deal of assistance to go back there.
Very true. Tell me, dear lady, if you just arrived from Brazil 2 days ago, why are you in such a hurry to go back?
Well, I thought it was safe to come home because I'd been told that the statute of limitations on the crime I committed here was 3 years.
Yes.
But now I've found out it's really 7 years.
7 years.
So I got to get out of here fast before they nail me.
Well, I can see the urgency of your plight now that you've explained it. Here just for you is a lovely set of left-handed golf clubs from the Southpaw Sporting Goods Company of Milford, Delaware.
Well, I'm not left-handed, but I guess that's not too important since they won't let you play golf in the slammer anyway.
Use them in good health. And now today's final hard luck story. Here's a gentleman from York, Maine. It says on your card, your name is Ronald Reagan. Of course, you're not the same one.
Well, yes, as it happens, I am the same one. It's the other one who's not the same one. That's why I'm trying to get to California right now to collect 8 years of back salary as governor.
Well, I'm sure the hearts of all of us go with you, sir, but I don't know how you hope to collect salary for being governor of California when you obviously are not the same Ronald Reagan who held office.
Well, I would have done the work gladly if they'd told me to come do it. That's one of the key arguments in my court case.
Uh-huh.
The other key argument is that the state can't prove it was another Ronald Reagan who got elected. They'd have to ask several million people which one they intended to vote for. And I think they'll find it's cheaper just to pay me off than to go through all that.
Sounds as if your swindle's almost foolproof. Let us help you achieve your dream of getting to the West Coast. Here's a wonderful gift for you from our generous Bob and Ray organization. A large enough supply of Kenilworth's kitten kibbles to feed the average 6-pound cat for a full year.
Well, that's great, but I imagine my cat would weigh more than 6 pounds if I had one.
We thought you'd appreciate it. Our time is up for Hard Luck Stories today. Now back to Ray at our main anchor desk.
Fan, our next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 6:30 with Lester Smith, right here over WOR New York. And once again, Bob and Ray.
Again today, though, we're delighted to have with us Ralph Flinger. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, Ray.
He's here in the studio. Ralph is better known to most of you as Mr. I Know Where They Are. Now, he's made a lifetime career of keeping track of thousands of former celebrities, who are, no longer in the limelight. You ever called, Ralph?
No, I don't.
Sounds like it.
No.
Ralph, it's hard to believe the amount of mail that comes pouring in here from listeners who want you to tell them what's become of their old-time favorites.
Well, that certainly warms my heart, Ray. You know, a lot of former celebrities I correspond with get depressed when they realize they're all washed up. It does them a world of good to know that so many people out there still remember them.
Well, you can assure them that they certainly are remembered, Ralph. In fact, this letter from a woman in Queens is typical of those that we've been receiving.
All right.
She says that the film comedies featuring the Little Vandals were her favorites at the Saturday afternoon matinee many years ago, and she wonders whatever became of the little boy who didn't have any front teeth. She thinks his screen name was Punkins.
Yes, indeed. That would be Punkins Wintermute. Of course, now that he's in his late 50s, he calls himself Llewellyn K. Wintermute.
He was just known as Punkins when he was with the Little Vandals, is that it?
No, his name really was Punkins, but he had it legally changed when he grew up and entered the brokerage business. He found that clients wouldn't take him seriously with a name like Punkins, especially since he doesn't have any front teeth, as I mentioned.
Yes, I can see that that would be a big disadvantage for a professional man, have a name like that and no front teeth. But I assume he's getting along all right now that he's changed his name.
Yes, just fine. He's living in Dayton, Ohio now with his third wife. I got a letter from him just a few weeks ago saying that he doesn't like her as well as his second wife. But he's learning to make the best of things.
Well, I'm sure that comes as good news to his legion of fans. You do have a cold, definitely.
No, I don't, Ray.
We have another letter here addressed to Mr. I Know Where They Are. It's from a man in Manhasset. And he's wondering whatever became of his boyhood sports hero, Pudge Dorfman. He says that Pudge played on the same team with the Four Horsemen of Notre Dame, but he never received as much publicity as the others.
Yes, goodness sakes alive. Pudge Dorfman, there's a name out of the past, all right. I know the gentleman who wrote in will be happy to learn that Pudge is still active in sports. He lives with his youngest daughter on a small island in the South Pacific now. And he's out on the beach almost every day, kicking coconuts to the natives.
Well, it's nice to know that a person his age is still in such good shape.
Oh, Pudge hasn't changed a bit. In fact, he's still trying to make people believe that he played on the same team with the Four Horsemen of Notre Dame.
But you have reason to think otherwise?
Yes, I have reason to think otherwise.
Well, at least Pudge is still in good health. That's the main thing, I guess. Now, Ralph, I believe we have time for just one more letter addressed to Mr. I Know Where They Are. It's from a lady in New Jersey, and she's inquiring about a woman who used to call herself the Queen of the Gypsies. And she believes the woman's name was Magda Opalescu.
Oh, land sakes, there's a woman I'll never forget. Those flashing black eyes. She always wore a long, brightly colored skirt. Magda ruled over most of the gypsy conventions that were held in the Pacific Northwest before World War II, you know.
No, I didn't. I never attended any gypsy conventions in the Pacific Northwest before World War II.
Well, let me tell you, they were colorful events, Ray. The tribes would all gather in those big Pierce Arrows and other limousines. They drove in their caravans. They'd camp out in the park or fairground for a week or more every spring, and the newspaper people always wanted to come out and get a picture of Magda Opalescu waving her tambourine.
Well, it all sounds very colorful. Is Magda still living?
Yes, indeed she is, Ray. Of course, the gypsies have stopped roaming around the country the way they used to, but Magda will still read tea leaves and tell your fortune if you'll cross her palm with silver.
I see, and she lives in a gypsy encampment somewhere, I suppose?
No. She lives in a condominium near Long Beach, California. Her husband's in the plumbing supply business out there. I don't believe he's a gypsy.
No, it doesn't sound as if he is, but Magda's the one we were principally interested in anyway. So, thanks for dropping by to tell us about her and to answer all the questions that have been pouring in here from our listeners.
Well, not at all. It's always a pleasure to step back into the past. Goodbye.
Goodbye. The makers of Einbinder Fly Paper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we have a quiet evening, other times it's noisy. Either way, we keep on the lookout for trouble. The other night, we just finished eating a quick sandwich in the squad car when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr., turned to me and said,
What can happen to a guy if he returns? No deposit, no return bottle, Sam.
Beats me, Ralph R. Jr. I don't know of anything in the city criminal code that forbids it.
Neither do I, Sam, but it says right here on the side of this pop bottle, no deposit, no return. Maybe I'd better just throw it out the window to be on the safe side.
I don't think that's being on the safe side, Ralph R. Jr. There's several laws in the city criminal code that forbid throwing a bottle out a car window.
Oh, I guess you're right, Sam. Sure puts a fellow in a bind, though. They must do something to you when you try to return a no-deposit, no-return bottle. Otherwise, they wouldn't have it printed right here, you know, that you shouldn't.
Yeah, really, he puts you in a bind, all right. Maybe you better just put it in the trunk of the car to be on the safe side.
Well, that's no good, Sam. I've already got the trunk filled up with gum wrappers, so I won't violate the littering ordinance in the city criminal code.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Not much room for
anything.
Calling
Care 119. Care 119. Answer a request to break up a family argument at 2233 North Franklin. A family argument at 2233 North Franklin.
2233 North Franklin, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to. Sure wish that call had come in while it was still light out. It's awful hard to see those house numbers around the neighborhood in the dark.
Oh, you've got a point there, Sam. And I'd sure hate to bust into the wrong house.
Yeah.
Somebody might live there who's not even having an argument.
Yeah. Wouldn't be so bad if the house we want was near a corner, but 2233 must be in the middle of the block where there's no street light. It's awful hard to see house numbers in the middle of the block after dark.
You got a point there, Sam. What if we use a flashlight in the glove compartment to check the house numbers?
That's not a flashlight in the glove compartment, Ralph R. Jr. It's a folding telescope, all folded up.
Oh. Why have we got a folding telescope in the glove compartment, Sam?
I put it in there so we could see house numbers in the daytime without getting out of the squad car. But it's no good for seeing them in the dark. You need a flashlight for that.
You got a point there, Sam.
And we don't have a flashlight in the...
Care 119, disregard that call to break up a family argument at 2233 North Franklin. The case has been handled by the men of squad car 206. The parties involved have been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
While we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a household tip from the makers of Einbinder flypaper. Friends, are you under the impression that flypaper can only be used to catch flies? If so, then this will come as good news. Einbinder flypaper is also great for sealing packages or holding things down that might otherwise blow away. In fact, it's ideal for almost any job around the house where you're now using ordinary brown sealing tape. Yet flypaper costs only somewhat more. But be sure to ask for genuine Einbinder flypaper, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations. Get some today.
That husband and wife found arguing at 2233 North Franklin were each convicted on one count of engaging in a family argument. The wife is now serving a 10-year sentence in the Women's Correctional Institution at Tehachapi. The husband was placed on probation and is now having a good time in Las Vegas.
And so two more desperate criminals are brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
Okay, Stan, thank you. Good night. We'll see you tomorrow. And that does it for Bob and Ray for today.
Tonight's WOR Radio Mystery Theater, which follows the Fulton Lewis News commentary, is called The Paradise Cafe, and it stars Court Benson.
And we will see you tomorrow at 4:15. Until then, Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumb.
This is WOR New York, an RKO General Station.